Jesus gave this message in response to three questions raised by the disciples. When will the destruction of Jerusalem take place? What will be the sign of Jesus' coming? And the end of the age. And in Jesus' message, as we noticed last week, in this sermon on the end of the delay of the kingdom, he provided the disciples with a key, which we find in Matthew chapter 24. If you want to go ahead and meet me there, that's where we'll be today. Matthew chapter 24, and the key is found in verse 15. The key is the abomination of desolation. What is that? And why is it important? How does it help us with this passage? Well, in Daniel chapter 9, Daniel is told of a 490-year period where God is going to settle accounts with Israel. The Father is going to settle accounts with His Son, Israel. This is called the 70 weeks of Daniel. And the abomination of desolation is an event that occurs in the final 7 years of that 490-year period. It's what we call the 70th week of Daniel. And by referencing this event, this abomination of desolation, Jesus is placing these events that he's speaking of to his disciples in that final 7 years where God settles his account with Israel. Now, with that in mind, the question that still remains is, well, when, Lord? When will these final 7 years begin? When will we expect these events to take place? And to understand that, Jesus is going to give some parables to help them understand. And we're going to pick up those parables in verse 32 of Matthew chapter 24. Verse 32. Now learn the parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth its leaves, you know that summer is near. So, you too, when you see all these things, recognize that he is near, right at the door. Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. Now, we are familiar with parables. It is a story that takes something familiar and throws it alongside something unfamiliar in order to tell us something about it, to give us some insight into this unfamiliar thing. But the interesting thing about a parable is, while it does have the ability to illuminate, it also has the ability to conceal. You may recall that Jesus did not always speak in parables. Do you recall when he began speaking in parables? After the nation rejected him. So we find in Matthew chapter 13, Jesus begins speaking in parables, begins using this new method of giving information about this kingdom program that has just taken a turn. Look at chapter 13 just briefly. I want you to look at this with me. Matthew chapter 13. He begins speaking in parables and he gives the parable of the sower. Notice his disciples' response in verse 10. And then notice Jesus' answer to the disciples. Matthew chapter 13, verse 10. The disciples came and said to him, "Why do you speak to them in parables?" And Jesus answered them, "To you it has been granted to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been granted. For whoever has, to him more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has shall be taken away from him. Therefore, I speak to them in parables, because while seeing they do not see, and while hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand." So he's saying, I'm talking to them now in parables, because they don't see, they don't hear, they don't understand, and this way they're not going to get it. I'm taking away this knowledge of the kingdom from them. But you who have ears, you who want to understand, I'm giving it to you. To you it's been granted to know the mysteries of the kingdom. To them, it has not. I'm taking it away. In chapter 24, Jesus takes this familiar image of the fig tree, and he uses it to illustrate the coming kingdom. Now, sometimes parables use images to symbolize things. So I think a man, he goes out to sow some seed, and the seed is the word of God. And the ground in which the seed falls is the heart of man. And the bird that comes and snatches up the seed, well, that's the devil. I understand that each little portion of a parable can have some kind of meaning behind this. And knowing this, some have noted that the fig tree, as found in Matthew chapter 24, is an image that is sometimes used to reference Israel. In fact, just a few chapters before, in Matthew chapter 21, Jesus curses a fig tree for having no fruit, which is certainly meant to be a critique of the nation's failure to discern the times. You should have known that Messiah was coming to you. You should have been ready, and you're not. So for this reason, some think that the budding of the fig tree in Matthew chapter 24 was a symbol that referred to Israel becoming a political state in 1948. If that's so, then the generation that Jesus speaks of in verse 34 would be the generation that witnessed the birth of Israel as a political state in 1948. That generation would not die out before the return of Christ. We would be in the end times now looking for that come. It would be soon. Because really, a generation typically is 40 years long. That event happened 70 years ago. So that, you know, we're stretching things, if that would be the case. And that's partly why, you might recall, in the 1980s, there was a lot of buzz going around about end times events. 88 Reasons Why the Lord's Coming in 1988. These kind of books are popping out. Because they're thinking, well, a generation's about to be up. Jesus must be returning. And they're interpreting this verse as saying, hey, this is referring to Israel becoming a political state again. But they could have saved themselves a lot of trouble by simply looking at the parallel accounts of this message. For example, listen to how Luke records this same parable. This is Luke chapter 21, verse 29. Don't turn there. I'll read it. Then Jesus told them a parable. Behold the fig tree and all the trees. As soon as they put forth leaves, you see it and know for yourselves that summer is near. Apparently, sometimes a tree is just a tree. And in our text, Jesus is merely making a simple comparative illustration using a familiar reference that the disciples would understand. So what's the point? What are you trying to tell us, Jesus? Well, you see that tree over there? Just like you can tell that summer is near based on the signs in nature, so also when you see these things, you know the kingdom is near. It's coming. I think of November 1st. If I go to Walmart, or I go to Target, or I go to Kroger, what kind of decorations do I find? Christmas decorations on November 1st. They got the Halloween stuff out. Christmas stuff is in. I go around. I wait a little bit longer. Thanksgiving is going to come. I'm going to start hearing different songs on the radio. I'm going to start seeing certain movies pop up on television. All of these are indicators that Christmas is near. It's right at the door. It's coming. In the same way, when you see these things, what things? What things is he talking about? Well, the things that we spoke of last week. False messiahs, wars, famines, disasters, and the abomination of desolation. That's the key. We experience trouble today. We have all kinds of trouble today. But when this abomination of desolation happens, you know the kingdom is near. Like how near, Jesus? Like right at the door. It is right there. So hold out. Persevere, endure. Your salvation is near. Jesus is saying in this as well, there will no longer be any delay then. No more break in prophecy until this whole thing is done. The generation that witnesses the beginning of this is going to be the generation that is present when Jesus returns. Sometimes in prophecy, we were talking about this in Sunday school this morning. Sometimes a prophet will see two events And they'll look like they're happening simultaneously. Like one's going to happen and then one's going to come right after it. These are happening like almost right at the same time. But in reality, we find out that those events are separated by very many years. Well, Jesus is saying that's not going to be the case anymore. Once this thing starts, we're going straight to the end. It's like a roller coaster at Six Flags. I mean, you get in there, you sit in the seat, that metal bar comes down and it goes click. And as soon as that thing starts moving, you're in it for the whole ride. It's too late to chicken out now. Ready or not, you're going through the whole thing. You know, that'd be a great name for a roller coaster. The Great Tribulation. You know, So Jesus is saying, once this thing kicks off, I'm taking you right to the end. Now look at verse 36. Jesus says, but of that day and hour, no one knows. Not even the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but the Father alone. Now hold on, Jesus. I thought we were supposed to know based on the signs. Verse 33, you told us when you see all these things, know that He is near, right at the door. But now you're telling me pretty straight up that we can't know, that not only can we not know, you don't even know. What's He saying? Well, what's interesting in this, if you'll look, there is an emphasis on time in this statement. First you read of day, then you read of hour. And Jesus is going to give two illustrations that follow this to kind of tease this out. Just follow it through the verses with me. Notice in His first illustration, verse 37, it will be like the days of Noah. Verse 38, in those days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark. Verse 42, therefore be on alert, for you do not know which day your Lord is coming. Now look at the next illustration, verse 43. If the head of the house had known the time of the night that the thief was coming, he'd have been on the alert. Verse 44, the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not think He will. Verse 50, the Master will come on a day when He does not expect Him, at an hour which He does not know. What is Jesus saying? Well, He's telling the disciples that date setting is a complete waste of time. You don't have to clear your calendars out. Don't worry. Ready or not, when I come, I'm coming. I like to think of this kind of like hide and seek. Everybody played hide and seek growing up as a kid. You know, you agree upon as a group, the seeker's going to count to a certain number. You know, let's say 10. But I don't know how y'all do things in Texas and Mississippi. We just don't let them just count to 10 and take off. Because what are they going to do? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then they say, ready or not, here I come. And we say, well, of course I'm not ready. I haven't made it 5 paces. So what we do in Mississippi is we say, you got to count by Mississippis. Did they do that in Texas? 1 Mississippi. 2 Mississippi. See, you can't fly through that sucker with Mississippi stuck in there. But still, the idea is the same. You know they're counting. You know that it's coming soon. But you don't know the exact time that they're going to pop up and say, hey, ready or not, here I come. Your job is to get ready. Your job is to go find your place because this person is coming. In the same way, the previous parable is teaching that based on visible signs and based on a very specific event, this abomination of desolation, you can know that the end is right at the door. Christ's coming is near. You can anticipate it. However, you won't be able to know the day or the hour of His return. You can't say, all right, well, this is our last Friday, so let's do it on up because you know Monday Jesus is coming. You can't put it on a calendar like that. Now, I'm sure you noticed, verse 36, Jesus says even He doesn't know. He doesn't know the day or the hour. How can that be? He's God, right? How can it be that Jesus doesn't know this particular time? Well, I think what He's saying here is that it's not His prerogative. It's not the Son's prerogative for when this takes place. This is the Father's plan. The Son comes to do the will of the Father. This whole rescue operation is carried out by Jesus. It's the Father's plan. So He's calling it. So this is Psalm 110. The Lord said to my Lord, "Sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet." Sit at my right hand. How long, Lord? Until He says, "Go get them. Go get them, son. Wipe them out." So that's what Jesus is saying here. He's saying, look, that's not my decision. That's the Father's decision. But just know that when it starts, we're going to the end. Verse 37. Jesus says the coming of the Son of Man is going to be just like the days of Noah. Now, we covered Noah a long, long time ago, like 4 years ago. But do you remember what the days of Noah were like? Well, we didn't get a lot of information in the story of Genesis. We knew that the people were wicked in those days. Is that what Jesus is going to talk about? What does He say those days were like? Well, notice that He just says they were eating, verse 38, and drinking, and marrying, and giving in marriage. Is there anything wrong with those actions? These are pretty mundane actions. These are regular things that everybody does. They're not really wrong in and of themselves. But He's saying they can be wrong. If that's all the individual is living for. These regular activities in which these people have concerned themselves with in their daily lives from day to day are the main thing. They're the only thing for them. It's just like today. You know, people are going to be concerned with their jobs. They're going to be concerned with the television or the sports or whatever it is that you got going on to the degree where you completely miss what God may be doing in the world. That's what He says is going to happen. They're going to be so involved in these things. God's over here bringing a whooping on Israel and the Antichrist to bring them to repentance so Jesus can return. They're not even worried about it. They're not concerned with that. That's over there. I'm over here. And verse 39 will say, they did not understand until the flood came and took them all away. So will the coming of the Son of Man be. And the word for understand here is just know. They didn't know it. They didn't know that this was going to happen. They had no idea. They had no idea that this event was coming because they had no thought about God, no thought about their Creator. So, in the days preceding the flood, individuals were going out about their routines. It is another Monday, another 9 to 5, another working for the weekend. That's what's going on, caring about the worries of their lives, no thought about this potential coming judgment that Noah has been preaching about. They're not hearing that. That's some crazy guy building a boat, whatever that's about. They're going about their routine until the event was upon them. They had no idea. No idea until it was too late. Now notice this. This is very interesting. Verse 40. Then there will be two men in the field. One will be taken and one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken, one will be left. Therefore, be on the alert, for you do not know which day your Lord is coming. You know, we could say that there's two playing canasta, one's taken, one's left. There's two playing soccer, one's taken, one's left. There's two in the office, one's taken, one's left. I look at this, and I ask, what does this mean? Are we talking about the rapture here? Is this the event where Jesus comes and takes away believers to be with Him? Well, who was taken away in Noah's day? Who is left in Noah's day? In Noah's day, the wicked world was taken away in judgment. And the believers, Noah and his family, were left behind. So it will be when the Lord returns at the end of this tribulation. The wicked world, they'll be taken away in judgment. And the ones who believe, who endure to the end, they will be saved. They will be delivered. They will be left behind. We are not talking about a rapture here. We're talking about judgment and removal of the wicked. A very different event. So Jesus says, be on the alert. Be ready at all times, because ready or not, I'm coming. Now notice it. Verse 43, his second illustration. But be sure of this, that if the head of the house had known at what time of the night the thief was coming, he would have been on the alert and would not have allowed his house to be broken into. For this reason, you must also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not think that he will. The Friday before last, Andrew and I had company coming over. We had dinner with some friends at the seminary. And I asked her, I said, well, what time are they coming over? She said, well, I told them just to come over whenever. I said, you told them what? She said, yeah, I told them that dinner was going to be at 6:30. You guys just come over whenever. Now, since I don't know what time that they're going to arrive, what do you suppose that I did? I mean, you think that I guessed? Said, well, I think that they're going to arrive at 6:20. So I'm going to prepare so that I'm ready for them to arrive at 6:20. No, that's not what I did. See, I got ready. I had to make sure that I would be prepared no matter what time they arrived. I needed to be ready because they're coming, ready or not, at some time now, sometime before 6:30, I don't know. So I got to be ready. That's what Jesus is saying here. He's saying, look, security would be cheap and easy if thieves only robbed places at 2 in the morning. You know, you wouldn't have to worry about having security all night. You just get it for 2 to 3 in your cover. He says, that's not the way that thieves work. You don't know what time they're coming. It's the surprise that they're looking for. He says, that's how the Son of Man is coming. It's going to be a surprise. It's going to be a shock. He's saying, no, you need to be ready because I could come at any time. You won't know. You won't know. What is that going to look like then? If they need to be ready with this eager anticipation at the end of this period of tribulation because they know that he's coming but they can't know exactly when, what does Israel need to do? Notice it. Verse 45. Who then is the faithful and sensible slave whom his master put in charge of his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is that slave whom his master finds so doing when he comes. Truly, I say to you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But if that evil slave says in his heart, my master is not coming for a long time, and begins to beat his fellow slaves and eat and drink with drunkards, the master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour which he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. William Barclay, in his commentary on the Gospel of Matthew, says this: there is a fable which tells of three apprentice devils who were coming to this earth to finish their apprenticeship. They were talking with Satan, the chief of the devils, about their plans to tempt and ruin men. The first said, I will tell them that there is no God. And Satan said, that will not delude many, for they know that there is a God. The second said, I will tell men that there is no hell. Satan answered, you will deceive no one that way. Men know even now that there is a hell for sin. The third said, I will tell them that there is no hurry. Go, Satan said, and you will ruin men by the thousands. The most dangerous of all delusions is that there is plenty of time. Jesus says, ready or not, he's going to come. Now, I look at this text, looking at these two slaves, they both belong to the master. One is faithful, one is sensible, the other is evil. They both have a stewardship given to them, but their behavior is far different. And I ask, who are these slaves? Are these believers? They have the same master, right? Are they believers? Now, if they're believers, well, when the master comes, he takes that evil slave who's beaten the other slaves, doesn't expect him to return, who's drinking with the drunkards. He takes him and assigns him a place with the hypocrites where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. He disciplines him and kicks him out of the kingdom. He says, you have no place. Your stewardship has been removed. If that's a believer, we're saying you can lose your salvation. I mean, that's what he's talking about. You're out of the kingdom. I say, is that what he's talking about here? Who are the group of people that we should expect to be involved in God's dealings in this time period? As you recall, the 70 weeks of Daniel are for Daniel's people and Daniel's holy city. The time is for Daniel's people and Daniel's holy city. Who are Daniel's people? Israel. And his holy city is Jerusalem. In the Old Testament story, Israel's relationship to God is pictured three ways. Mainly. I mean, it's more than that, but it's mainly three ways. As a husband and a wife, as a father and a son, as a master and a slave. The nation of Israel is the Lord's. They're all his slaves, but the problem is they're not all obedient slaves. Not all Israel is Israel. Not all Israel are believers. And he's saying, when this time period is taking place, when God has picked up his dealings with national Israel again, there are going to be some Jews that are believers. There are going to be some that have come to the belief that Jesus is the Messiah and he's coming. There are going to be some that disagree with that. They're siding with Satan and his team, the Antichrist. They're going to say, there is no judgment coming. These are just stories. Our master will be gone for a long time. And they're going to abuse these who actually believe in the Messiah. And he's saying, be careful, because I'm coming back. And when I come, based on what you've done in that meantime, we're going to have words. Those who were sensible, those who were faithful, those who had understanding, those who were looking for the coming, those who were ready for the return of the king, well, he's going to assign them, he's going to put them in charge of everything. But the evil ones, the ones who rejected the king, the ones who said in their heart, judgment is not coming, they're not going to this party. They're not going to the kingdom. They're getting kicked out in the place of outer darkness. And I look at this, and I understand we're talking about this future time period. I understand that for us as the church, we're looking for a catching up that could happen at any time. There's no signs for us. There is no extra event that we're looking for before the rapture could take place, before the church could be called up to be with Christ. We have nothing. It could happen at any time. That's called the doctrine of imminence. It could happen like now, like in the middle of this sermon. So I said, well, what does that mean for me? Paul will say this in Romans 13. He's encouraged them to love one another, to love their neighbor. Loving your neighbor is the fulfillment of all this law. In Romans, you have a Jewish problem. They want them to follow the law. He says, love your neighbor then. Stop persecuting these guys. Treat them right, if you're concerned with that. And he says, verse 11, do this knowing the time, that it is already the hour for you to awaken from your sleep. For now salvation is nearer to us than when we believed. The night is almost gone, and the day is near. So we need to be ready. We don't want to shrink back at his coming. When the king appears, we want to be excited to move into his glory, because we were ready and serving him like a faithful servant while we waited.